three o'clock for two members. If you end up, and the other members will be on the side. And for the benefit of the two of you, I have to be contacted.
She will be resurrected somewhere.
Thank you.
Opportunities, as well as structural factors, which include discrimination. Equal rights to economic resources as well as access to ownership and control over land and other forms of property, financial services, inheritance, and natural resources in accordance with national laws, enhancing the use of enabling technology, in particular information and communication technology, to promote the end. Adopting and strengthening sound policies and enforceable legislation for the promotion of gender equality and empowerment of all women and girls at all levels. That specific goal is very important because it then leads into all those issues that we just highlighted, and those are embedded into what the Commission for Gender Equality will be undertaking for this coming financial year. And of course, we know that our country is not only working towards looking into UN processes, but we are part of the Africa, we are part of Africa, and therefore we also have looked into issues around Agenda 2063, the AU Agenda 2063, and the fact that there are specific things that we have to put in place in order to ensure that development is achieved, and that we strengthen African integration and unity as we do some of the work and some of the issues that we need to do away with as far as gender equality is concerned. We know that it aims to build upon the achievements and draw some lessons from area strategic planning efforts at regional and sub-regional levels, including some of the treaties that have been signed, media treaties and efforts and the like, to address new and emerging issues in the continent. And it is a plan that looks into short-term, medium-term and long-term. And therefore, Agenda 2063 is a guiding principle in continuity of action, drawing appropriate lessons and building upon what has been worked on in the past, and in brief, making every effort to consolidate and strengthen development. Participation and inclusion of all stakeholders in the construction, design, implementation and monitoring and evaluation of Agenda 2063 is one of the building blocks of Agenda 2063 success. And in giving effect to implementation of the agenda, the Commission will be engaging with some of the stakeholders within the AU and SADC processes when there is a need to do so. We know that departments, for instance, such as SSA, are really far ahead in terms of putting together some of the activities that are espoused in Agenda 2063, specifically the fact that they have also are highlighting that 2030 is the year that women empowerment should have been reached. So it's really important, and as we have been working with institutions such as UNEPA and the like in the AU, it's quite important because that it will give us a sense in terms of what are the things that we should be looking into as far as this new agenda is concerned, just to make sure that we are, as a country, taking some of the commitments forward. The agenda aims to fully participate and be owned by all continent stakeholders, the full involvement of women and youth in particular, to rekindle the spirit of working together towards collective prosperity and common destiny under a united and strong Africa. Agenda 2063 will put in place a results-based approach to concrete targets that are measurable and can be tracked and monitored, so that's what we'll be looking into very clearly. When we were engaging on our reports and reporting on some of the instruments around Beijing and even the SADC protocol, some of the issues that we also looked into are issues around the UN Resolution 1325. We have highlighted in the Beijing report specifically the fact that still a lot of work that needs to be done by us as a country, in the sense that the only thing that we've been doing as far as 1325 was concerned was to ensure that we gender mainstream troops as they go out for peacekeeping missions, but we have not as a country been able to put together a plan, you know, a plan as directed by 1325. So that's one of the things that now the Department of Defense is working on, and they are being helped by, you know, some UN institutions like UN Women and the like. And we do know as well that the UN itself is also trying to broaden the definition as far as issues relating to 1325 and the war and the like, to an extent that there might not be a possibility that, you know, some issues around xenophobic attacks and whatever might just fall under there. So it's important that we also keep you know, a close watch into that and have engagement as well with the department that will be putting a plan together, which in this case is the defense. So we are also not leaving that aside. So we will then also be continuing the work in terms of looking into issues and specific programs that the country is undertaking to ensure that we are in line with what UN Resolution 1325 is all about. Further to all these, we have our own national development plan, which has been adopted by cabinet and forms the basis for government and future policy making, putting the South African society on a healthy development path towards 2030. This document is therefore taken very seriously as a policy driver. The NDP provides the framework for achieving the radical socio-economic agenda set out in the governing party's election manifesto. It recognizes the need for a capable and developmental state and a thriving business sector and strong civil society institutions with shared and complementary responsibilities. It identifies, you know, decent work, education, and capacity of the state as particularly important priorities. It also highlights the need to improve the quality of administration of many government activities. It notes the weaknesses in how government institutions function, thereby constraining the state to pursue its development objectives. And it identifies primary problems as weaknesses in capacity, which has led to weaknesses in performance, and it further makes proposals for addressing the problem. And as we are aware, it's got specific priorities that it has set out, running from radical economic transformation, rural development, land, agrarian reform and food security, improving the quality of and extending access to education and training, ensuring quality of health, fighting corruption and crime, issues around social cohesion and the like, and therefore it's also an important document that the Commission has then looked into, because as we are a monitoring body and we look into whether government departments are in keeping in terms of this policy that has been put forward, we would need to then look into those ones that obviously specifically affect gender and be able to then report to the parliament in terms of how we are doing as far as the NDP and the priorities that are contained therein we are doing. As far as our strategic objectives are concerned, we still have the same. As we indicated, this is the last year, and we'll only be, the work that we'll be doing this year as well will be also utilized as a fundamental work that will help us to say what are the things that we need to then change in the next financial year as we look into coming up with a new cycle of our strategic plan. We still have the four strategic objectives, three of which are service delivery related, and the fourth one is the internal one, to ensure the creation and implementation of an enabling legislative framework that promotes attainment of gender equality. That's the first one. And we still have those specific sub-strategies, the five sub-strategies that support it. monitoring and evaluation the promotion of gender equality and other policies that are in place and practices, whether in public or private sector, and then report that to Parliament. We're still initiating and reviewing the improvement of the legislative framework in all scales of government, and that impact on priority areas of gender equality. We're still conducting periodic performance assessments of priority ministries that we then upfront will be highlighting, and state institutions, government departments, political parties and the private sector on the implementation of applicable legislation and policies that impact on gender equality. We'll still be evaluating the implementation and effectiveness of the National Justice Facilities for Gender Equality, and we'll still, under this strategic objective, convene dialogue with policy makers at national and also provincial level, just to ensure that there is take up of some of the findings and the recommendations that we put forward as we undertake our research. And trade goes with strategic objective 2 as well, protect and promote gender equality by engaging with relevant stakeholders to educate and raise awareness on issues of gender equality, challenge patriarchy and perceptions thereof and stereotypes, and take action against infringement of gender rights through the implementation of appropriate redress. This is where we investigate complaints. This is where we also have systemic investigations of things that are systemic in nature within our society. This is where we develop coordinated programs that ensure promotion of gender equality. This is where we also initiate interventions for sustainable development and promotion of gender equality by addressing violations in the social, cultural, political, economic, security and human rights dimension. And this is where we also collaborate with like-minded institutions and civil society for the effective development and protection, promotion and attainment of gender equality. And this is an important strategy for us, you know, because we've been really trying to utilize it as positively as we could, because we recognize as a commission that our budget and how we are structured, we are a people of 100 staff members across South Africa and all the provinces, and therefore for us to ensure that we are able to reach, the only way that we can do it is to ensure that we collaborate with strategic partners that are working on the ground in communities. For strategic objective 3, it's still the same. We'll still be monitoring state compliance with regional and international conventions, which has been ratified by the public, but looking at those ones that relate to gender equality objectives. Then we'll still be conducting annual reviews and audits like we've done previously. We're still going to try to do that, and we're still going to interact and report to national, regional and international bodies on state compliance with these conventions that have been ratified, and then make recommendations for improvement. Strategic objective 4, like I've said, is always internal looking to build an effective, efficient and sustainable institution that will be able to fulfill its mandate. And we just talk about ensuring that issues of governance are proper, ensuring that we have a financial management processes that are healthy, our IT infrastructure that supports the objects of the institution, developing a comprehensive HR strategy that aspires to address all HR-related matters in a coordinated way, to develop a long-term funding model for the CGE. This is always there because obviously due to funding issues, we need to all the time see how we also engage with other institutions. We have had some of our programs that have been supported by UN agencies in some instances, but also other national institutions on some of these things. So we always ensure that we have that. To develop a coherent communication strategy that promotes a positive public image
ensure that we review our communication strategy every year, just to ensure that, you know, we are still relevant. So what we do at the beginning of the year, we run a short audit quickly to check how we did in the last financial year and whether there are specific things that need to be changed or be reviewed in the communication strategy, and then come up with a communication strategy that will then be able to support the work that we have identified for the financial year as we are tracking the year. So under strategic objective one, I'll be highlighting now the actual activities that we will be undertaking to ensure that we support these strategic objectives that we have highlighted. We have a gender transformation hearings that we have been undertaking, and each year we either look into public sector. We started off with public sector. We then did institutions that are listed in the JSC at some point. We then went a level down to local government, and we engaged with municipalities. In the past year or two, we've concentrated specifically on institutions of higher learning and some of the departments that are supportive to that. And then this year, again, we are going back now to the private sector institutions. So we'll be looking now, zooming into the private sector institutions, as far as transformation hearings are concerned. But because we have done work previously in terms of these hearings, and we have recommendations and we have specific reports, we will then be reviewing, going back to some of the reports, checking whether all the institutions that we've called before us have taken into account or have done something about our recommendations. And if they have not done anything about our recommendations, we have now put in place the red card, green card campaign, where we will be naming and shaming using the idea of, you know, football, where you are either giving a red card where you are not doing very well. So that's what we will then be doing with the institutions that we have seen before, just to ensure continuity and check whether they are taking forward some of the recommendations. And in the gender transformation, we have not done all the universities. So we are going to then look into the last three universities here in the country and go through that particular process that we went through and with other universities, just to see how they are doing. We'll be having a report, our gender barometer report, which looks on the status of gender policies and practices in the public sector, still utilizing the gender barometer, so we're still going to be ensuring that we utilize that. For some of the gender transformation hearings, we will be concentrating on the mining sector. And the reason that we are doing that is to ensure that as research goes on the ground for this particular financial year and takes information, legal then runs with that information and calls on the institutions to come and appear before us, just to ensure that we have that integration as well between our own units and departments. And because in this financial year that has just ended on the 31st of March, the gender barometer was specifically put before the mining sector, will then be taking some of their findings and ensuring that we engage with the mining sector now with hearings. And we do submissions as always, looking into some of the acts, either that are being the bills that are passed by Parliament, but as well ensuring that we participate when the South African Law Reform Commission puts out some papers with view to then come up with legislation on some of the issues. For this year as well, under the same strategic objective, we know that the Commission, each time we go for elections, we always look into election manifestos, analyze the manifestos of different parties from a gender perspective and follow that through, observe the elections and look at how the end looks like in terms of how women have been placed in some of these positions and the line right at the end. And we will still be assessing issues around gender-based violence. We know that the special rapporteur was here in November during 16 days, and we are still awaiting her report. We've been engaging very closely with the office of the commission, and part of what we want to do is to check as you know those recommendations that will be put forward to government in terms of what needs to be done to ensure that those specific things are done. So GBV is still an issue in the country, and therefore it's going to be important that FCGE will still continue with that particular program in checking exactly what is happening, in engaging with government as well, because as much as there is work that is being done, we've reported that before, that work is done in a very fragmented manner, and we still need to have somebody that coordinates or has been highlighted to be the one that coordinates these issues up front. So we will still be continuing with that. The victims charter recommendations of the study, we did the victims charter in previous years. Last year we just took three departments in the victims charter just to check and assess whether they've also taken our recommendations forward. And then in this year we're going to then finalize and take the other three. Evaluation reports on monitoring of costs, we're still continuing with that. We think costs are important because many a times there are a lot of cases that are taken to court and decisions that affect women. Even processes there of course affect women in many times. So we are still continuing with that process, and we'll still have a report which will then be engaging with different stakeholders. What we normally do, the previous reports, we're engaging with the Department of Justice on that to then highlight what are the actual activities that we will, or the actual issues that we found on the ground as we were doing or dealing with court. Dialogue with policy, dialogue with policy makers as well fall under that, where we will be engaging with different policy makers on previous research which we have highlighted. We've indicated that for this year that we are finalizing, we have the AGDI report for instance that we'll be engaging with. We have the gender barometer report and the like. So those will be the reports that we'll be going back to engage and see that some of the key issues that we've highlighted are taken into account as various policy makers plan. Under strategic objectives 2, we have increased the number of complaints that we would want to deal with, and the number that should be attended or finalized. For outreach as well, we've got outreach, advocacy and legal clinics that are normally conducted in the different provinces. And we have also increased the number because we feel that that's what will help us to ensure that we have a better reach. So the number has increased from where we were we've been incrementally increasing those particular outreach and advocacy legal clinics that are conducted. And we are still undertaking systemic investigations. In the mining sector, we have highlighted before that we are engaging with a report, for instance, that are coming from the Northern Cape on some of the mines there and some of the issues that were coming up issues around search for jobs and all that, so we are still continuing with that. The gender transformation in the judiciary, we have a final draft report that we have put forward to all the stakeholders, and we've had responses, as we have indicated before, from all the relevant respondents, as it were, in that complaint. And however, the JFC has requested to be given a bit more time to look into our report, and the time that they have requested was to say they will get back to us with comments and the like on the report April, May, which then means that it helps to then roll over into the current financial year. So we are hoping that by end of May, when they then respond to us, we will then be able to finalize that. Decriminalization of sex work, we're still looking into that as well, and that can help. We, having looked into obviously testing the budget, but also having looked into the framework, international framework that I spoke to express, we have now taken a stance in terms of trying to redirect how we are doing our work as far as public education and information is concerned. As I indicated, we have one education officer in every province, and I think it's important that we see how we work, we become innovative in terms of how we work, so that we are able to then reach. We've seen that this economic climate is going to be very difficult to get more money, and even say we'll be employing more people and the like. So we've taken that into account. It has not changed much, it's just a redirection in terms of how we do our work. And we are now really having a program where we want to capacitate different formalized structures that are working on the ground, just to ensure that whatever it is that they do, that will then take into account issues of gender equality, and hopefully then be able to replicate and come up with proper products. We will be engaging and working very closely and capacitating municipalities. Now we're taking into account the fact that we are now going to be going into local elections, and we will then be having some new people there. And we have already in the last year, as we have engaged, signed off an MOU with Calgary, which is now going to be very easy for us to then find a way of capacitating municipalities. We're working very closely with the union, civil society, community-based organizations, NGOs, in all the provinces on gender implication of sustainable development goals, the UN Resolution 1325, the NDP, just to ensure that all these are mainstreamed into the local programs of municipalities and the work that is undertaken by some of these institutions on the ground. So what we then have done is, in the fourth quarter of this current, of the financial year that has just ended, part of what we've been doing was to develop a training program that will enable CG to reach out to the community through partnerships with municipalities and other structures to promote gender equality, to develop further the skills of our education officers, and empower them to be the drivers of this training of trainers kind of program on gender equality with municipalities. We'll be training municipalities on sustainable development goals, as I've indicated, and we will obviously be infusing issues around NDP and all that. And we are hoping that once local government is aware, when they do service delivery, their service delivery will take into account gender issues and have a black gender lens on some of the activities that they undertake. So that's sort of you know, the a little bit of a redirection or an add-on that education officers will be doing that will help us to really reach on the ground. Under strategic objective 2, which mainly looks into the work that public education and information will be doing, we've got quite a number of activities that are there, coordination campaigns developed with targeted stakeholders on gender discrimination. And what we'll be doing, we'll be having specific reports. We want to have specific reports on these things, because then those reports will then guide us to say what further needs to be done. And as we are coming right to the end of our track plan, it will help us then say, do we take this, you know, pilot forward? Is it helpful? And what are the kind of things that we are finding, which will then help us to then rework and see how to strengthen that. Develop training manual, like I've indicated, on legislation, regional and international instruments relating gender mainstreaming. We'll be educating officers, the training program for officers is going to be now in May, it's been set up already, and the manuals are there already. We're just finalizing a few other documents that are attached to the manual. And then we are also planning, we've also increased our media platforms. We are really wanting to utilize more and more. We've seen in the past years we've been increasing and we've been seeing the fruits of really utilizing media platforms to disseminate gender equality education and information programs. So we'll still be doing that, and of course the MOUs that we have with National Forum for Community Radio Stations is still standing, and we still have the relationship with SABC as well, which also helps us to then have that specific reach. Intervention programs on gender violations initiated with traditional leadership in religious sector. This time around, as you are aware, what we've been doing, we've been having signing MOUs with traditional leaders, and then having specific programs with them on gender equality issues. But what we are now going to be doing, we will get into these traditional areas, scan the environment and see what are the issues per area, because issues are different. Issues will be different from Mpumalanga, from Eastern Cape and from Northwest, for instance. And the idea there is to then hold public hearings with traditional leaders on some of the issues that we found on the ground, to ensure that we try and heighten and hopefully ensure that some of the issues that we might have been raising as we were dialoguing with them previously are then taken further, because we will then also have specific public hearing reports like we've been doing with other institutions. We have already met, for instance, with the Royal Bafokeng in the Northwest. We've met with Mamunyamunzashi, and just to look at some of the things that we'll be doing. And so we are going to be doing the same thing, you know, with all specific provinces, just to ensure that we look into those issues and then have specific dates for public hearings. And then we will then also hold stakeholder engagement, and we target a specific stakeholder engagement that will be held on gender issues in provinces with targeted stakeholders. The idea of this particular activity is to ensure that as we are finalizing our strategic plan, every quarter we have engagement with NGOs and community-based organizations in the communities on the ground, and to have engagement just to see what are the real issues that are there, so that when we then start drafting, we ensure that our structure is relevant to the issues that are happening province by province. Provinces are different. So we will be having specific reports. Every quarter, every province will be sitting, engaging on the ground, so that we take out the issues that are of importance and then see how we are going to ensure that we plan our programs around those specific issues. Under strategic objective 3, we'll still, as I indicated, be undertaking the assessment reports on retail protocols and charters. African Protocol on Human Rights and the Rights of Women, standards on gender and development. We have now finalized the AGDI report on Africa Gender Development Index, and we are going to then be holding a specific consultative meeting with stakeholders on the findings and the recommendations that are coming from that report. That report is an exciting report for us as a commission, because it's a report that will give us a clear sense of where we are as far as gender equality is concerned, both from quantitative and qualitative perspectives. And that will still continue to have consultative meetings with other stakeholders around issues relating to with stakeholders on SDGs. We have been, you know, partnering and engaging with institutions such as CSVR and engaging different engagements with different stakeholders just to see how what everyone is doing to ensure that they localize the SDGs. So it's one of the things that we'll be looking into. Engagement with stakeholders on Fiji, attendance at international and regional events. And as well, under this strategic objective, one of the things that is now coming up is the fact that gender commissions within Africa are trying to come together so that we have a forum where we all meet and we have engagement on some of these things. We've had a few meetings. We had already signed an MOU with Kenya previously. Now Zimbabwe is on course now. They have coalitioned us and we've had meetings with them. And we've had Rwanda, Uganda. So that's one of the things that will also, activities that we'll be undertaking just to ensure that particular forum is taken forward. Under strategic objective form, we will be reviewing some of the policies that need to be reviewed from finance, HR, and ICT environment. And we will be still following up and ensuring that all the issues that the AG has raised are tracked and are dealt with and are cleaned, and issues of risk assessment and the treatment plans attached to it are dealt with. And the chair, when he made his opening remarks, he spoke about the fact that this year is an important year for the Commission, and for that we are also going to be having a serious engagement and launch of our report, engaging with different stakeholders on the CGE 20-year review report, which we started working on in this past financial year. So it will be finalized. We are targeting all that, as you will see in the actual APP document, to then have an engagement. And it's also another document that will also help us as we are moving into the new era of the SCAS plan. We will be taking some of those things that are coming out of that report into account to ensure that the CGE is still relevant and it does what it has been placed here to do, or that is mandate. And we will still be ensuring that we effectively manage resources towards an effective service delivery, spending within budget, and we have a sound financial position and the like. And under IT, we have a new system that we've put in place now. And obviously there are specific things that we are still continue looking into, issues around business continuity, issues around disaster recovery. So those are issues that we will still be, you know, working into. And of importance, and which is something that we also hope that it will also help us curb the cost ensure that our budget now can be really utilized for service delivery, is the fact that we want to now, because we have this platform now, we want to now convert from telecom to voice, and hopefully then cutting, therefore, the cost of paying telecom all the time. And then we do have a training plan, WFT, as far as HR is concerned, so we'll still be doing that. We have a need to ensure that our personnel is up to date on some of the issues that we work in, so HR will still be continuing with that. And we'll still be having ensuring that we implement our employee assistance program. Under the same, I have indicated that every year, throughout the year, what we normally do is to do an audit. We audit our communications plans, and we check what were the things that we focus on, what are the things that need to be strengthened, and then we incorporate and come up with a strategy. And that was done towards the end of this financial year that has just ended. And therefore now we must ensure that the new strategy works as we start the new financial year. And we will then be doing a lot of media releases as we do that will be linked directly to the program that we are doing. What communications normally does, it takes the APT and looks at what it is that we are going to be doing, and then they come up with a media plan that will ensure that they support each and every activity that we'll be undertaking. And we still have our campaigns that we still feel are still important. One Woman, One Hectare of Land is still our flagship campaign that we'll still be running it. We are sort of seeing interest. So I think it's going to be important that we really forge ahead on this particular one. And some of the things, some of the committee members, you know, when we started this journey, one of the issues that they've been talking about is our branding, and therefore we're taking that seriously, and we come up with a branding strategy every financial year just to ensure that we put CGE out as a particular brand. And as I conclude, Chair, I think as far as our funding is concerned, we don't want to sound like a broken record. We are still remaining the same. That will be seen as the CFO gets into his presentation on financials. We've only been mainly getting inflation adjustments. And for the financial year, this current financial year, the inflation adjustment that we received is 2.7 million. And this, as we all know, of course will be consumed by salaries, because DPSA as well, come April, May, they will be putting out there a particular percentage in terms of what salaries must be increased with. And as you can see, it will actually be more than 2.7, because I think it's probably sitting at 6.5% for this financial year. So really, there hasn't been really increases like the systems, despite the inflation, our increased mandate of course, and public expectations in terms of what the CGD should be doing. As indicated, even in previous engagement, this situation obviously is a very limit as a CGE, but we have really each year tried to ensure that we become very innovative to ensure that the programs, because we are here for the programs and the mandate of the CGE, that's why we are here, and therefore we need to ensure that mandate and the programs are run, and therefore we have been trying to be a little bit more innovative to ensure that we use the little that we have to be concentrating on a program. Redress of gender violations and advancement of rights is passed to grassroots level, and it requires interventions with multiple approaches. And therefore, if you look at really at the current budget, that is not really sufficient. But we will still soldier on to ensure that whatever that we have, we are able to innovatively utilize it to ensure the reach. Thank you, Chair.
and it doesn't allow us the circles to you the roof.
Okay. Now, before we do the whole day, do you think if the members who have been appointed, they wish to take the image, and after we continue to take the image?
Thank you. Thank you.
Effectively this framework emphasizes a long-term continuous integrated aligned planning. Even as we are presenting this particular ATT and the budget, the view, the perspective should be long-term. The chair and the CEO have indicated that we are in the last financial year for the strategy that has been adopted and adopted by the committee. Five-year strategy, we are at its tail end. So therefore, even this presentation basically fits into the particular long-term strategy. And there's also been indication that there will also be reflections on the achievement or non-achievement of the particular strategy, also being linked to even the 20-year long-term review of the CGT. Some of the factors impacting our plan, our budget and our plan, was basically the macroeconomic situation in the country. As we know, I mean, in as much as the CGT is an independent institution, but we are part of the South African state, we are part of the government, so even our funding and money comes from national, federal, central government. So we are impacted like any other department, institution, central department. We know that as the state we are pursuing the priority areas that have been identified and for which resources have been prioritized via the MTSF, Medium Term Strategy Framework. That we are basically constrained by all factors, circumstances surrounding the general funding for the public sector. And what has happened is that the same economic situation exists previously, and in 2014 we know that there has been a government-wide budget reduction, and for the CDE effectively for the preceding financial year ending 31st March 2016, there was a reduction of 3.1 million. And from our projections then, for the 2016-17, the reduction on a cumulative basis will come to 4.7 million. So effectively between that period and now, the CD has lost 4.7 million of its baseline. For the current year, there has been, like the CEO has indicated, a nominal increase of 2.7 million onto our budget. Last year we had 67.3 million. This year we will be operating on a budget of 69.9 million. Drawing from the principles, common practice, best practice, and also drawing from the macroeconomic circumstances, environment, with what principles are outlined there, effectively we operated on the basis of a 5.9 general increase, that is an assumption of a general price increase, but as well we know that it has been the trend in previous years that the cost of living adjustment generally outstrips the inflation, the official inflation, the official CPI, which was on average 6% in the preceding period, and we're anticipating effectively that as conservative as it might be, the increase would hover around 6% cost of living adjustment. That is what we are projecting by using history as to make our assumptions. The CEOs also emphasized that because of the lack of funding, we have put moratorium on some of the positions within the establishment. The establishment that has been conceived to be adequate to support the long-term strategy. But some of the positions that they're in, because of the financial situation, cannot be funded, and therefore, because we have had vacancies, at the time of planning, there was a decision, an organizational decision, to put their whole confidence in position. I can just quickly mention then the critical ones. Our runout of the ATT requires the presence of a COO. We have that on the formal establishment, but we can avoid it. The HR director position is not being filled. We can afford it. And one other critical position would be for the senior legal officer at head office. Is the position with a particular role but has not been filled. And to an extent possible, I think in as much as our business almost continues in similar fashion from preceding years. But as we're doing this budget, we went into it. We followed what's called the zero basis of quality. So we just didn't do it, apply the increase and say next year, last year, but for changes in prices. And one other factor, which is a spending factor, we are operating with a model that is human resource reliant, and therefore there will be a slide that further explains or outlines the nature of the PGE budget, but effectively what we can take on is that there are lots of entities because some of the nature of the cost driving our business are such that are fixed, and then there isn't enough space for being innovative and then to an extent that we will consider optimal. This slide effectively just outline how we have been funded through the MCF period. We can very quickly that if one does the calculation over this period, you see that the compounded increase was hovering around 6%. So in a sense, whatever increase we have had at receiving the budgetary cuts has been consumed by the changing prices. So we are current to where we are sitting. If you look into the second last column, that's the budget for the year that we are planning presenting for. We should be, if there were no cuts, we should be sitting with a budget of 74.5 million. So that's a loss of 4.6 million. But generally, there have not been any effective or real injection. We are just being given money to cater for the inflation, the effects of inflation. Slide number 9 basically summarizes the structure and nature of the CGE budget as it were. Officially, so effectively, our budget is a main division within a vote for the department, for women in the presidency, a beg your pardon, for the ministry, the department for women in the presidency. And we, in as much as our strategy is outlined in terms of strategic objectives, but within and across strategic objectives, we've got programs. Three programs in the main. We've got a commissioner program that provides for governance and effective support from the work of the CG. I'll give you an example. When there are hearings, which is a core activity, the commissioners are central participants in those particular investigations. We've got a program on corporate administration support, and the main core program in where you find that we have legal officers, education officers, research officers, and the like as supporting functions. And basically those supporting functions are spread across the country, the length and breadth of the country. Another characteristic of our budget, which is also almost a key characteristic, is that compensation of employees consumes a bigger chunk of the resources. However, this is not by accident or by mismanagement or level 4 site is basically because our programs are structured in such a way that we roll out our mandate using internal resources. Our model is to use internal resources. If you want the report, we don't outsource reports. We to outside consultants, we do those reports ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so it goes with many other activities. Professional services is defined broadly, but it will include services for litigation, which is also part of the key mandate of the CGE. All these fees are mandatory by the Director General, so in the main, those will be some of the top drivers of spending. And you have noted as well that we have been 9 provincial offices as outlet of service delivery. And we have head office in Braamfontein, but effectively we are running offices, so there are offices overhead which consumes resources as well. I think issues like having to travel between locations from head office to provinces to support provinces and the like, telecommunication, couriering documentation, information to various locations would require resources. So the point of emphasis is the last we had on this particular slide, but the nature and thrust of our budget is such that most of it is of a fixed nature. We really cannot play and be a little bit innovative by reallocating and diverting resources. Can I also take you through, honorable members, to what the budget for the current financial year is on slide 10, quickly summarize the budget of 69.9 million will be spent according to the accounts of distributors. We know the salaries of key drivers and some of the things that have been mentioned in the slide, so I'm going to quickly move to slide 11. Just to draw a total picture, effectively from that particular budget, 56%, if you look into the bottom block on the table, number table, you'll see that 56% of what has been allocated goes to the core service delivery program. The split is indicated between goods and services and compensation of employees. And also getting into the middle of the table, you'll see 14 million rand or 21% of the food allocation goes for running the offices, including even running with the cars, telephones, printing, every other thing that relates to office operations are included in the 14 million. This is, when I mentioned printing, that is printing other than printing on the direct APT activities. So that's the picture, and when one looks into the overheads, you'll know that there are necessities, there are imperatives for operations across the offices, so they are totally unavoidable. And effectively, because these are unavoidable and fixed together with the COE, what remains of the allocation from National Treasury is 4.8. And that's the money that we had to be innovative as we were considering activities, specific activities in the ATT that the CEO presented earlier. So point of emphasis is that it's an indication of the funding challenge and concerns. Further drilling down, slide 12 is just to give the breakdown of our COE per program, per unit or section or department within the CGE of the location cost centers. As you can see, basically, we are operating with a structure. We are planning to operate with a structure of 108 personnel, including commissioners, 11 commissioners, but as well including two team hands who are already into their own intensive program within the PPE, so we have made money available for them. Interns will be in the Limpopo and Northwest province. And the figures are there, distributed, also showing the average cost per head per annum. Globally, our average cost per person per annum is $470,000. And to reflect on this particular average, the CGE is in its model. Just to put an emphasis, the CGE utilizes professional services for our own internal, we're using lawyers, we're using seasoned researchers and the like, and basically more than 50% of the CGE staff members are professionals in their own right. So therefore, at an average of 470,000 per annum, I think we are cost effective for the analysis. Slide 13, we spoke about the focus overhead, just to share information, just about breaking the overhead down. On the screen, we are given notes basically as to what is the key rising expenditure. I'm not going to really go through that for the interest of time. Having said that, we have got funding challenges. We have funding challenges, and then as a result, we don't have enough training scope. But out of innovative and dynamic tactics, the CGE could manage to do more. I'm just highlighting a few of the things that we will be doing, although are not funded from the 69.9 million that has been allocated by Treasury for 2016. One of the tactics that has been considered in the ETP to refocus the public education information program to now start engaging with CSOs, NGOs and the like, partners that can really help distribute the mandate was through a program of training the trainer, developing manuals, training our own internal resources to go out instead of doing the work on the grassroots themselves, leveraging that by empowering organizations that are already there in the network within the sector. So in the previous quarterly reporting, we've also made mention of the return surplus from the previous year's 2 million rand that has been has allowed us to utilize. So we have set aside some money for that to do that. So despite the fact that in the absence of additional funding, we couldn't have done this particular program, we will source from the particular grant from the country. We have as well a 20-year review, and from how the terms of reference of this particular review was such that it has to be comprehensive, it has to be done independently, not necessarily by CDs. It's one of the exceptions in which the certification to use third parties in as much as you don't use outside consultants. But this is one of an example of activities that will be meaningful only if they have a character of independence in review. So we will be partnering. We intend basically to use partnering but also use some money from defense surpluses. One other innovation, the CEO mentioned that in order to save costs, we need to move away from using the telecom landline and use WIP. WIP stands for Voice Over IP Internet Protocol. Because we've got a network for the CD across offices, we can use the internet basically to make calls exclusive super land, the conventional, traditional landline use. So it's one of the established study innovative farming interventions. We know previously as well we have been using partnerships with FNG, CF and Rumble, and NCRF, NEMUSA. Just for completeness, NCRF stands for National Community Radio Forum, and NEMUSA stands for National Innovative Media Institution for South Africa. So there are already MOUs in place, and then we are partnering, and then partnering basically brings about the achievement of goals at a very much cost-effective way. So those were just highlights of the innovation that we are implementing at the Commission. To further indicate the allocations, we have indicated the allocations for COE, compensation of employees, we have indicated the allocations for office overhead. Now we are indicating the allocation for strategic objectives. This is composite. Composite includes everything else allocated into strategic objectives. The first strategic objective is number one, which is the strategic objective that deals with the legislative environment, enabling the legislative environment so that gender equality is attained. Activities pertaining thereto were made by the CEO, but as it were, point of emphasis, first bullet on the, in the red block is that we are in the main utilizing internal resources. Staff, commissioners participate in hearings. They spend a lot of commissioner time during the hearings in preparation and every other thing, so they are active direct participants in this particular activities. And take away as well is that this strategic objective overall consumes 17% of the budget at 11.5. The allocation sub-strategy are indicated from the region. And there are also other direct costs. Other direct costs are effectively the supporting office overheads we allocated. We have done some hosting to allocate them across practical objectives. And emphasis is that we are always innovating to ensure that we achieve more with less. Strategic objective number two, dealing with activity intensive strategies. It is where engagement with activities around education, public education, information, and advocacy or care, and then the figures are indicated. And emphasis is that we are using partners. We have a new conceived tactic and plan to even collaborate more with NGOs, CSOs, and other stakeholders within the sector to ensure that our reach is expanded in a dynamic sense. Strategic objective three effectively deals with international instruments. I think the EM presentation made a big mouthful about what is the grant allocation there on it. Is the least one on the cost delivery, the least, the one that consumes the least resources, but the work here is primarily done by our internal resources, hence 3.8 of the 4.9 is on competition of employees. Last strategic objective is administration, 1.3% of the resources, but includes two programs in the main, the commissioner and corporate services programs, and the figures are indicated at 30 million. Taking through, emphasizing basically that risk management ought to be incorporated into the plan. We are just citing, fighting or coaching from learned people to say that the only alternative to risk management is crisis management. So for this particular plan, we don't want to have the crisis management. So we are going through the exercise of incorporating risk management into the whole thing. And then if you look into the preceding slides, you will see that criteria and specific risks for each sub-strategy has been outlined, and even mitigation strategies indicated, just to ensure that we can see the plan through. I'm not going to read it through, but these are not the only risks, but these are the top risks that we have identified. And finally, just to summarize and conclude, challenges and opportunities that we are facing, I think can emphasize more around the constraints we have from funding inadequacy and implication basically that there will be lesser scope to have more activities in the ACT. As we have seen, this budget has not included in the expenditure budget. There's just no money to access to any money to plan for replacement of our aging asset base. Friends that our AT is relatively new. And also, repeating the same test basically, our baseline has been eroded. I think the FSC presentation to this committee has also confirmed the challenge. And there's a greater demand for CG, rightfully so, I mean, given that challenges like CGE are now prevalent and the larger cities of the CGE are under demand, and by extension our mandate or expectation.
Thank you, Chair Jackson, and thank you for the presentation. My question is not from the president, but from the first presentation. In your presentation, goal 5, I think then they can say the power of women and girls. You are actually saying the first point 2 and 3. And you make all healthy messages that I will talk about the enforced marriages. Now, looking into the normative work that you do, also the issue of forced marriages. It's so complex and fundamental that sometimes you find that the very communities are so protective of what they are doing, and they are not seeing it as anything wrong that they are doing. Same applies with the victim who is forced into this marriage, may not see how that he is, her rights are being violated. How do you see yourself addressing this issue? Because I should think it needs a lot of research and a lot of engagement with the traditional leadership institutions themselves and the community at large. Second one and the last one is about gender-based violence. Looking into what we see in the constituency, we find that the victims sometimes decide not to even go and report the violence because of the treatment that they get from the officials. How is it that, what is it that most can be done in terms of training the very officials definitely not from yourself, because you've got so much to do in terms of monitoring the education. Training the very officers who are expected to take the complaints, because they also inflict pain to the victims that are already have been abused by whichever type of violence. So I want to know what interventions that you can do to make sure that the officers are being trained so that they know how to handle the victims. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much, and thank you for the presentation. And maybe to start with the last presentation on the issue of the violence, I think that after me, as people standing during the previous year, that the U.S. community will continue to raise the question of the conflict to the federal and the appropriation committee. This is one thing that we have tried to overcome, especially with the media. So we raise the matter sharply, because we've been comparing actually the budget in allocated to the public protector, which is more than 200 million. Your human rights being more than 100 million also, and CGE included. I don't know what is underlying the budget of less than 100 million. So we'll continue to advocate for this, and should we agree with the Magistrate Committee that you are underfunded, and more especially that you are expected to deliver your mandate nationally, provincially, and even in the local municipality. So we agree with you and with you. And the other issue is the term of office for the Commission. I think you have raised the matter in our previous interaction in the first court. We have raised this matter, and I think we have to follow this up, because I know the department that we may must advertise the parliament must change over the process. Also, we need to do all these things. I think we must start to prepare on the control of the the commission of so we must start to prepare for this more, especially that you are now in the EPC, passing the budget, and the schedule will be prescribed for having a teacher to go to the first year and to the program by mid-May. And I think the main thing for a lot of the public marketing, so that you can be able to go and campaign for the local community. And I'm not quite sure whether it's going to be possible that the parliament must attend the other committee that is going to come to the MRC Act. So I'm not quite sure whether we need it for me. But otherwise, we thank you, Chief, for raising the issue of commissioner fees, but I think we'll take it up as a committee, and because it is our responsibility. And still on that, I was asking myself, because we're seeing in most of the reports you are reporting regularly to parliament and to the office of justice. So I'm just asking myself, are you accounting twice, or because the speakers will need to have this committee to monitor the CGE. So are you also accounting to the speaker directly, or is it still this committee? For better training reasons, to parliament, we are reporting to parliament and to the office of the speaker. Or are you referring directly to the office of the speaker? Public authority, office subject in democracy, within the office of the speaker. That's the main question. And all the most of your sub-strategies, some you have decreased the budget that was allocated as compared to the previous year. but we have found out that most of your subconsciousness, the candidates will drastically increase. Just for example, your strategic objective 1, okay, your subconsciousness 7, the candidates have allocated 250,000, but this financial year it has just gone up to 4 million. What is the reason? It's not the only subconsciousness. I'll give the other example, and the other one is in the strategic objective number 2, sub-strategy 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 4. The budget which was allocated, there is 680,000 in the last financial year, but this year you have allocated the 6 and the 6 million. This is the new target, it means anything. And the other one, the policy that the last one in strategic objective 2, you have allocated 1 million, but now it goes to 3 million. Can I get an explanation on that? The other, with regard to the complaints, I see that you have. We are going to deal with a target of 900 complaints this financial year. But surely the cases are going to, the complaints are going to increase based on the number of the cases that will be rolled up and brought over from the previous month of financial year. I'm not quite sure in terms of the statistics I'm going to make it. And the other one on the interaction with the political parties. I see that in your first quarter you'll be drafting something in your first quarter. In terms of your strategic objective 1, strategy number 3 of political engagement with the political party. You are saying in your first quarter you will be drafting monitoring proof for local government in action. And to me, I think the timing is very wrong. Because already the political parties have started with the program. They started with the nomination of candidates. The ruling party has just launched its manifesto, PA is following, the EFF will be following. So you know, the timing to me it's not good. Because at a certain point you must be able to engage them so that in terms of the manifesto they'll be able to, you know, include issues of gender within their manifesto. So I'm not quite sure what is it that you're going to do. The timing to me. Because now you're saying you're also going to engage IEC in your last quarter, which is towards actually after election. It's appearing on your APT, your detailed APT. And the audit fee, I see you're paying 2 million. For the is it the auditor general that are auditing your assessment? Hi.
Yes,
sir.
I'm just, you know, the man is like 2 million, why, compared to the budget that you are getting. And surely in other departments that are getting 3 million, for transport and others that are getting 3 million. Surely they also can deliver the same amount that you are paying. So what criteria are they using to charge in terms of this audit fee? And I'm going to ask the one of the internal audits.
You've already asked.
No, there are two different things. It's called the internal audit and the audit story. The audit tax. There are two different things. Yes, let me tell you, I think my questions are not important.
Thanks. thank you, Chair, and thank you to CGE for the presentation. Yeah, also, okay, so for the number again, you've also allocated about a million rand for internal auditing. Just understand what it is, because I would think that you'd have a committee that is responsible for auditing that is already paid under the, you know, the allocation of payment for that method. Okay, and also the other issue that on our second program forgot is the fact that, you know, when you talk about the, if you look at the manifesto of the different political parties, it's not only the representation of the number of females, but also looking into the policies themselves, because the manifesto translates what the policies are about when it comes to gender equality. Do you actually interrogate those policies to see, like, each political party, how are they faring against the other, not against the other such, but according to the United Nations goals? And also, what I wanted to find out is that, you know, you're saying that you're going to collaborate with the department, but we just want to find out which how do you actually collaborate with other departments? Like, do you do that with CGE and also the Department of Social Development? And what is it that you actually try to achieve when you're collaborating with them? With regard to your strategic objective 4, we've noticed that you have once again allocated 2 million, so 2.5 now, for IT. And also HR policies, procedures and practices, we've allocated 4 million, they've gone up, all of them, they are more inward looking, but from the previous year you've gone up. One would think, especially when you talk about policies, that you just be reviewing them and amending them, but it looks like, you know, you are again developing based on, I'm assuming, based on the amount of money that you are allocating. You're talking about 10 million to maintain optimal governance and oversight structures and policies between commissioners and the secretariat. If you could just maybe just explain to me, there are basically 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 under the table and strategic objective 4. Okay, and also, you're saying that you're coming to the end of the strategic plan. I just want to find out if it's possible that when you start to look into your next strategic plan that you can involve the committee, that, you know, become part of that process. Okay, I think I'm okay for now.
You want me to try it? The longer you said to me that I'm attending the Ministry of Presentation. Mami Zode, you can know honorable Majega, Zungena Kulinami, Boba and Bonasat, Kulikat Lassuzara, the Kulinami, Mado, as the Lizzy Mandi. The better Lumpara Tesumede and Amsuzaran as Mandi Kakan. Our color is a Kulumango who called the Dabo. Lang by the Commission Dina is a Kulazi, a Shabant, which was an observer. La Oba Chulalusi, another is your home. Go to the name to reach as a whole, last visa visa Kunuka Maluguchi. Ongenze, They said we are not going to be able to do it. especially yabantu besifazane ukuthi ngabe nibheka kanjani indaba yabantu besifazane kakhulukazi ukuthi niyabona yini ukuthi bahlacindezelekile njengokuthi nje imosi noma iningi labo ibona bathola ukuhlukumezeka izilwane zibadla beyofuna amanzi emfuleni badliwe izingwenya akhona amakheyisi akhona kanjalo futhi ukudlwengulwa lokhu enikubiza ngokuthi ukureshwa ibona abathola ukuthi bagcina bereshiwe beyofuna izinkuni emahlathini ngakho njalo ukukhombisa ukuthi la siyaxoxa ngokuhlukumezeka kwabantu besifazane kodwa ekugcineni abagcina bengalutholi usizo kanjalo futhi ezindlini abahlala kuzona khuluma njalo ngani ngabantu besifazane ziyanetha ziyavuza ziqhelele indonga ngangokuthi kukhona nje amakhesi ekhona le ebhayi yomunye umama okhala ngokuthi awukho umnyango ongasawugqigqanga nani mbone ekhuluma kwi-TV ekhala ngokuthi nje kuyimanje kwayena akasayimisele nokuthi avote ngoba ukuvota kaboni kumsiza ngani ngoba uyaziwa ukuthi umfelokazi uhlala nabazukulu kodwa still indlu yakhe ihebhuke yasebhuke iyakhalisa wukho umnyango angawungenanga kuhulumente ukuthi kanti baphi labantu abasizakalayo ngabe kubhekekela uhlanga yini ngoba uma kukhulunywa ngale nto yokulingana kwabantu besifazane mina bantu bakithi abamnyama angaboni benzenjani bekuthola ukusizakala bese ngizobuyela lana khona ebhayi emazaweni kune-case kade ngenile nje manje ngomhlaka-15 yomama osehlala endlini 25 years umkhwenyana wakho usebenza amasipala khona ebhayi wasweleka noma washona lo mama nje uba ngikhuluma nani ukufika wakhishwa endlini ekhishwa ama-sheriff iy'khonzi zenkantolo nempahla yakhe nganey'thombe zakhe nje nendlela abayisebenza ngayo umama omdala ngikhuluma uma ngikhuluma ngomama ngikhuluma ngomuntu osewugogo na-89 years iy'ngane ziyabuya igogo wasehlele ehlathini usizo lwalulwamndeni iy'ngane sithi ugogo waso ukuthi nithini kulawo makhesi leyo khesi iyabuyela ngenkantolo ngomhlaka-9 kule nyanga ezayo bengicele ukuthi ngempela ezinye izinto asithi siyipresenta la sikhombise ukuthi siyaziyalandelwa ziyenzeka okokugcina nje khona namhlanje nale la ephalamente khona omama ngithi bawu-30 bahlezi la ma ungeneni thema ngifika ngishatha nami ngiyokhonjiswa bona labo mama laba kuthiwa bafika izweni basuke i-Eastern Cape ukuthi ubani ubalethile ubalethe ngayiphi inhloso kodwa ngoba sebekhona ngazi noma nibabonile yini manifika ngathi bahleli sangathi iphalamende liyalwazi oludaba sengikhothwa isibongo ngoba sinokuxhosa phakathi okuthiwa abakhona la kuthiwa ibona abakuvumeleni baye balambile bahleli ngaphandle belesebenza kaloliwe sathi kuney'mali zabakhonyana bake abangakaze bayithole kwanziwa uphenyo la iphalamende shem khona ngiyabonga ukuthi balwenzile babalandele babathola ukuthi angiyazicinela lento babalandela ukuthi labo mama ngoba kuthiwa basaqala ukufika la kuthena sekusukuwe kumeleli iphalamende lama inyanga yalangaphakathi ephalamende nethimba labo laya lathola ukuthi le nto abayishukumele ikhona lempela labo mama kufana ngabe bayayithola iy'mali zabayeni bakhe kodwa manje abasanakiwe bahleli ngaphansi mandi zokuthiwe namanye amabhasi ayeka bayazi babayazi nithini-ke nina nje ngabantu abalela nabantu besifazane na ziyabona okugcina nje nibabonise bahleli la ngaphandle.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to find out, I don't see any allocation of office rental on your list, because I just want to find out, you know, where are you at, because I think we have asked previously, and to be on a contract, that you are getting out of that contract as well. Just wanted to find out how far we did that. And also the issue of, you say that engaging with municipalities. There is a policy in the municipalities that enforces, the policy that's supposed to, use, it is implemented to ensure that women are given a certain portion of tenders within each and every municipality. I don't know if, I've just heard about it, but I don't know if it's really implemented. I just want to find out if you have looked into that. And also the other thing, I looked at your mandate. It says that you're supposed to lobby. I don't understand when is it that you lobby, and you know, like what does it mean, like in your instance, the lobbying. And also, we are getting a lot of requests from CGP, from university to say, you know, that we've had this selection for university and for the report, and also with land and all different departments. But then the problem is the implementation, because we don't have the power to implement. Now we're talking about red flagging and also, you know, giving out green flags and red flags. But you know the issue of what happened with the Uganda issue. There were recommendations from the commission, but nothing was done. So I don't know if the red flagging, the green flagging, if it's going to work. If you actually maybe thought about it on those terms, because no matter how many reports that you're producing, if they're not implemented, you're going to keep on having reports and, you know, coming up with reports which are not being implemented. What strategies are you going to use? Because I don't think the red flagging and the green flagging is going to work, according to my opinion.
Thank you. I'm going to, so I've been partially covered by what has already been asked, but let me say my say anyway, just in case it's a different angle. I think I'm also concerned about the fact that we have many reports, but that we don't know how they're implemented and how they're reacted. So I'm also quite keen to know how you interact with the Department of Women, the Department of Public Services and Administration on things like gender focal points, and then GBV in particular. How is this actually monitored? It is such a serious problem when you consider that women are 52% or more of the population. So what are the action steps that actually are taken? Another one, I'd just like an update on decriminalization of sex workers. This has been around for a long, long time, and it's report after report. I just want to know how this is going to be, how one can take it forward. What are your interactions with other departments, and where do we get involved? I remember in the previous term they did come and do a presentation to us. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
How is that this way related to the social development of the organization on government agencies and achievement? Should this be a synergy with all the departments? The other question is that in terms of the engagement with key stakeholders in the justice platform, when are you going to engage with the justice, and when are we fit to expect, are we fit to see on women? The last question is around the issue of dialogue. You said that you are also committing it to the dialogue. Whether now we are changing what we used to do as big as things to dialogue, and because what we have heard from the department is that now the Department of Women is also going to do the dialogue all over the country. Whether are you going to participate in those dialogues?
So we just need to answer that question. Then I'm going to allow the other commissioners to respond. I think about three. The issue of change of commissioners. There are written in my capacity as chairperson to the president of the party. To take other members, issue with the EGX directors to write directly to the speaker when there are issues. But we understand that we always hope the chair of the Constitutional Committee. So we listened to the speaker and copied the chair of the committee as well as the president in relation to the three commissioners' terms, which is commissioner's terms come to an end in May this year. Commissioner Shaw's terms is coming to an end in January 2017. And Commissioner J.J. Chatterton is coming to an end 31st May next year. Today I just had a short conversation that three commissioners, we know the CGX as well, a part-time commissioner could request his or her term to be converted from part-time to full-time.
Mm.
Because these commissioners were aware that their terms are coming to an end, they requested their terms to be converted. So the president, as well as the just approach to say that three commissioners requested that. They don't need to violate from the chair because they're appointed by the standard. So now the issue of the advertisement will be determined by the president's decision on the convention of the chair in relation to Parliament. So it's a matter that this will be engaging with the president and Parliament around the issues. The issue of the office that is responsible for Chatterland is a continuing engagement. We understand squarely that we must engage the committee on a number of issues. And after that office as well, to I think the issue of monitoring is coming, I think I'm coming on that. It's a problem that is coming from COVID. But when you push in the annual performance, it's always difficult to refer to what has happened. For example, when Station started the piloting, we're going to go to Calvert to pilot our own instrument. So we met with the ANC before, to discuss the women for Santaxi, the presentation for Santaxi. As you said, we are meeting with provincial ANCs to discuss these matters. So we started on that particular chain. The issue of as much as the agenda issues that we deal with, the matter about their payments and so on does not spread all within our mandate. It's all spread within the staff and commission and other structures. So we normally delve into the matters that our mandate has to talk about. But we have read in the newspapers, we've watched television, we know what is happening. If there are cases that members are aware of that are in court, there's a way to change the quality matter. We cannot be everywhere and work together. It would be important for Parliament just to warn us that we can try and monitor those changes and see what is it that we can do as a commission for gender equality. The issue of lobbying, I know there's a very thin line between the definition of advocacy and lobbying. And as a clinical, as a commission, we do that all the time. Taking into account controlling the chair of the portfolio committee is part of lobbying. Engaging parliamentarians on a number of issues is also part of lobbying. The other important issues I want to raise is the issue around the report of the Commission for Gender Equality. The report, how the legislation is written, says we produce a report and table it in Parliament. Then Parliament must accept all of us to hold those people who are supposed to be accountable in the single person. Until the CGE Act is amended to speak about other issues, then we can be sure. When we've lost the court in Parliament, we've come and present the report. Our hope with CGE is that honourable members, Parliament is going to call the report of the department to come. A good example of the report committee, for example, when we issued the report on SAFA. They call that. They call SAFA as well. Because of the engagement with the portfolio committee and us and SAFA, SAFA is an act on the recommendation of the report. So we call upon all of us in terms of chapter 3 of the constitution to work together and actually join and hands in terms of making sure that our oversight at the PGE and Parliament is actually fulfilled in terms of ensuring that we can't when we issue the report, because the departments are able to pay you and all those different departments are covered. I'll just stop there, Chair, and allow other commissioners to actually keep on some of the questions raised as well as technical issues raised by one of the members so that we always can actually do that.
Commissioner,
if
then you ask.
Thank you, Chair, and honourable members. I wanted to just very briefly preface my remarks to say that it's been 9 years since Parliament put me forward to be considered as a commissioner for the Commission for Gender Equality. And I really wanted to express my gratitude to Parliament for giving me this opportunity to serve on this commission as well as institutions supporting democracy. And the guidance and the support that you received from the portfolio committee, I believe, has given me an opportunity to use this space to take up substantive issues impacting on the quality of life of status of women. So I really want to take all my gratitude for that opportunity. Chair, I want to respond on a very first question that is your thoughts on early child marriage. And I think it also responds to one of the questions around the collaboration with the partners. We believe we need a multi-pronged approach. The starting point is getting the legislative framework right. We've been engaging thoroughly with the South African Law Reform Commission. As you know, they started a study that was called UNTWALA, the UNTWALA Commission. But we believe that that project needs to be made more broad because there are other communities, there are other race groups, there are other religious groups where we see forced and early child marriage in practice, and it needs to go beyond just the traditional African community perspective. So we're working to make sure that South Africa complies with those international conventions, that we set the minimum age of 18 for marriage, and that we criminalize instances of forced and early child marriage. But beyond that, for some 4 or 5 years we've been partnering with provincial houses of traditional leadership in the Eastern Cape, in Mpumalanga province, KwaZulu-Natal, on education and awareness in this response and in this regard. But the key issue is around collaboration with our departments. And that's where we'll be working with departments of education, with the National Prosecution Authority, with SAP, because we need reporting mechanisms available within communities where we've seen forced early child marriage. We need training for our educators, for our healthcare workers to recognize and report early child marriage. We need training for our prosecutors on how to use new legislation to get successful prostitution. So that's where we really see the collaboration working. We're setting up, you know, our Department of Social Development for the GBV hotline. We're looking at branding and using that particularly in our rural communities as an instant mechanism where social workers can meet, healthcare workers can be mobilized to respond. And then we have our ongoing monitoring. Chair, I wanted to just pick up on one or two other issues in relation to the elections and the concern that we're engaging too late. The Children's Committee is aware that we completed a study 2 years ago about women's representation in political parties. And there we went into political party policies. We looked at conference resolutions within political parties, internal political party policies on women's representation. We've had dialogues and consultations with women and councillors in municipalities to look at which gender issues are being mainstreamed into party manifestos. So yes, we're engaging now around the election so that it lists, you know, representation and manifestos. But we've already been speaking with the national the party liaison committee, courtesy of the IEC, and we're in the process of engaging with our provincial party liaison committee who are surfacing these issues with our political parties to take this seriously. Chair, with a specific question on decriminalisation of sex work. We are aware that the South African Law Reform Commission has handed over its final report and recommendations in response to adult prostitution as it was turned in to the Minister of Justice. And we were advised just very recently that this is now being taken forward to the adult justice cluster and reports for to cabinet to see what the implications are from that report. So we are waiting to hear that final recommendation, which I believe will be taken then once it's gone through the cluster to cabinet. And then we can engage with whatever recommendations are emanating there. But the CGE, we, as you know, have been investigating abuse of the rights of sex workers. And as soon as we have that final government position clear, we're ready to proceed with our hearing. Chair, this is my last input on the lobbying of Parliament. Apart from our own engagement with our committee with our chair, there are particular issues that we bring before this Parliament, and we actively are lobbying you. We table the recommendation for the adoption of 50-50 legislation. That's an outright act of lobbying. We believe it's something within Parliament's powers to put in that legislation to ensure we have 50-50. Our one woman, one hectare of land submission and advice to Parliament is lobbying in that regard. And finally, we table as well our recommendation that sex work be decriminalised. We put our voice behind you and we call upon you
to work with us to call for the legislation. So I would see those as instances of lobbying. Thank you, Chair. Before Commissioner, I just want to add one issue of the invitation to the Minister of Justice. But I've analyzed that report, but we were still looking for government to analyze and make sure that the position being found as
the municipality are not really implementing their agenda. In fact, they don't even know they are all police. So that is why we find that we have a training now that we have developed, because every time we make a comment to them, they come back and say, but we don't know what is gender mainstream. Tell us, train us, and all of them. So we have allocated a budget for training just specifically on this. But where we have been actively lobbying, the council, the premier will say, what are your findings? I will go to municipalities, I will raise it to different issues that are raised. So it's a mixed achievement, right? But the municipalities are not, even in their HR, they are not employing women, high positions, they are not employing women, and we have retired them on several occasions. But you will see, we have lost a lot of focus with this impact on what on our organization. On the political parties, we have also gone to different political parties. We know here which political parties do not have the gender. We are not clear what is the gender. Some people, they will explain to you what is their goal of lifting. Some people will say, no, here there is marriage. And some people will do it by default. You will see many women and then you don't know whether it's a policy or people have to do something, talk to the president and get more women in the list. But again, in the list, the IEC list of women, you see women are there at the bottom. Mm-hmm. So when there's one short list, they take women up and all of it. But I think for me, those are the things that we have raised in our political report. I think we have lost that report. Here in Parliament, we have one political party that we have women. No women at all. And those issues are there in our the other thing that I wanted to we have done almost many, and we have met with the leadership of the political party. And some of them, they do explain why they don't have women leaders. So we say to you, these are the requirements, we don't need them. And then we say to them, why women they don't need them? Then we say, meet us at 3 a.m. Sometimes we can't meet them. President of an organization at 3 a.m. But they will request like that. If you want to talk to me, meet me at 3 a.m. I let you sharpen that time. But there are challenges in the political party. And I think for me, it is for myself. We have raised the evening for you and these are the things that we need. The last point, Chair, you were asking us about justice, the police. We raised the things with the police. The ministers themselves, we meet with them, we meet with them, community policing, we meet with them. But again, maybe there's a pressure focus now on chapter 9 with the other conversation. Because you find that the department, we have to go now and lobby. You came to us and we found you, we retired you, how far you respond, you go to the DG, you go to an HOP. And we say, okay, we are going as CGE, we are going to do head holding with you. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that I think for me, as the committee, as the police, deputy minister, I think is the one which is responsible for the police to come and just give you a sense of what is happening with gender violence. We know that police are getting trained. Mm-hmm. They are sitting there, they are trained to take the cases. But because of patriarchy, the culture, your culture and your household and all that, the person who's in front of you, you will invite them over and go and discuss it at home with them before you come here. So the culture is coming into it.
We apologize for not seeing you. Yes, we haven't seen in the next time we'll make sure that we have more time with you as we have done as a department. Not that we don't want to be with some of the interesting stories that we we get from the CTE. So I'll give the chairperson of the CTE to round up that question.
Thank you, Chairperson. My understanding, Honorable Chair and members, is that those questions that we have not been able to answer will then write and then submit them. We know that we have not adequately able to answer them, and we will do that. And secondly, I want to assure the Honorable Member Chair that the report was done. So the report on the international
I'm going to go to the next one.